Hello and welcome to another episode of Control Alt Access. You know the deal at this point. We talk about video game accessibility. I'm one of your hosts, Laura. I'm here as ever with my lovely co-host, Aravia. How are you doing?
Hi, everyone. I'm tired. It's been Easter weekend week. I'm going to be recording the last day of Easter today, so yeah.
That it has been. I am also tired and I am in pain because I did that thing where I injured myself in a very inconsequential way, and then it just didn't stop hurting. I'm like, yes. Oh, I guess I'm just going to live with that for a while now.
This is my life now. Thank you.
mine was, I played too many handheld video games on a Saturday and apparently just did something to my wrist. And I was like, is this just going to be like fine tomorrow? And a week later, it's like, no, I can't put weight on that wrist. Oops.
Yeah.
Hooray. Oops.
Hooray.
For any handheld gaming, I've had to have like, I've got like a weighted axolotl that I've put on my lap because I can put the handheld console on that and it takes the weight off of my wrists.
Smart.
I've had to be like, what can I do to not have any pressure on my wrist when gaming?
Yeah, smart.
Should we talk about some things we've been playing this last couple of weeks?
Absolutely. Should we start with the three games we both have played?
Yeah, so we both played some of the games from the Games for Blind Gamers Jam that happened back in February. Which game do you want to talk about first?
We can start with the winner of the whole, the Impulse Response.
Yeah. Do you want to start us off on Impulse Response?
Yeah, so Impulse Response is a fully audio-only video game. Where you wake up after cryo sleep, and you wake up to blaring alarms, and you don't know what is happening, and you have to find your way around the ship to figure out why are there alarms and why can you not find anybody else. And this game was amazing.
I really loved narratively and audio design wise what this was doing.
Yes.
I did find this one the hardest of the three to play.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, a couple of the games we're going to talk about today are ones that are entirely, you're in a 3D space, you can turn around, you can walk in 3D space and you're navigating. I really struggled with this one's mechanic for how you identify where things are in 3D space, which was, I think it was the space bar you tap, and it basically does, like, echolocation. You do a little tap, and you're supposed to be able to hear where things are around you. I really struggled to, and maybe this is something with practice I would get better at, and I imagine that if you are someone who has zero vision and is already using a cane, you probably have a little more familiarity with than me. I really struggled to identify what direction things were in. I really enjoyed the game when I was engaging with the narrative, but I really struggled to find my way around.
Yeah, I have to say it was a lot of like the fumbling around was for me as well, but I think I enjoyed that because it made it more horror-like, because then I like couldn't go in a straight line and just like know that I could just run head first for the next door. I just really enjoyed the soundscape of this game. Everything made me, even though I couldn't see anything, I felt like I lived in this spaceship.
Oh yeah, they did a fantastic job of setting that scene. And I think once I got further in and got like, I think the problem was once I got out of that first room, was once I got a bit further in, there was more atmospheric sounds that I could use for cues as to where I was. But that first room, where it was like I was trying to find the door and the switch to get out and the computer, that was where my struggles were with it.
Yeah, I can see that. I actually struggled a bit like in the start because I didn't understand how you use the mouse and how you like use the mouse to actually, that could turn you left or right. So I just like walked, and I think for like the first 30 minutes, I just walked around with my head facing like one way, not understanding why. I kept just like getting to the same things all every time. So yeah, I struggled a bit with it. And I also think I struggled due to the fact that I have never played a game like this before. The voiceover, the voice acting was brilliant. I really, really hope I saw that they are thinking about putting this on Steam. So they're working on doing that. And I am hoping for doing that. I also, so these are games for the Games for Blind Game Jam. And which you will see me talk about a bit more is that also have made it so that some of the games do have bugs that you just cannot get away from, which takes a bit away from it as well. Luckily, this game was the only game I did not have any bugs at all, which also made the progress a lot more smooth and a lot easier for me to understand how to use it and how to do it. But absolutely, if you want to test out a horror game where audio is the only thing you can do, I highly recommend people checking this game out because I had a wonderful time with it. I wish it was like 8 hours.
There is something really promising in here, even if, like, I recognize I was having a hard time playing it. I wanted to be getting further into it because I was very intrigued by what they were doing.
Yeah.
The next one on the list, and this is one that I think I had an easier time with the navigation element of, even if I was less invested in the narrative element of what they were doing, was Valencia Tales: Strings and Stone. So this is a sort of Zelda-style adventure game where you have this item called the Divining Rod, where basically at any time, whatever you're pointing at in 3D space, you can press this button and it will tell you what you're pointing at, and it will communicate that way. One thing I would recommend if any of the developers of this game, of this game jam demo are listening, I think that their introduction needs reworking.
Yeah, it was a bit long.
It is a bit long, and I think it could have been really trimmed down. It takes a very long time to get into the game, but once the game itself starts, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, here is the thing with that game is that I wanted to really, really enjoy it, but I had a lot of bugs. So the problem was that the divining rod didn't work properly for me in this game. Again, this is a game jam game, so like that makes sense. But since everything took so long to like start, and this is an in-browser game, I didn't have it in me to restart everything. But it was sadly for me, it was that if I moved, I could go forward, and like my character was standing still, and I turned around. All of a sudden, the character just jumped to the next thing without me even touching anything. So it was really hard for me to navigate. And I am hoping that we see more of this kind of thing so I can try it again. Because as you say, I think it has, for me, I wanted to get more longer into the story and to actually get more to the fighting and stuff because I couldn't even get, like, I struggled to even get out from things. And then when that happened, I was just, okay, yeah, this.
It sounds like you were having the experience that I was kind of having with the first one, where I was like,
Yes.
I wanted to see more of it. I was invested in it. I struggled a little with the navigation mechanics.
Yeah. And it was I played it with a controller, and I think if I were to replay it, I would actually do it with a keyboard, even though they recommended a controller, because something with a controller did not work. And I do not know. I don't even know if it maybe was on my side because the controller I use is quite old. It might have like a lag or like it drags or what do you call it, like a drift, and I don't know about. So that might be it,
For
but yeah.
reference, I did play it with a mouse and keyboard, and I didn't have problems. So
Yeah.
you might be right that the controller implementation might have been where the problem was. But again, this is
Yeah.
the joys of game jam projects. These are things that were made in a month, and sometimes they're going to have a little wonkiness to them.
It's incredible, anyways, that I get a game out. And I also think that this was a bit easier to. They used audio in a better way than the first game in the form of, like, they told you when a sentence were done, which I liked when the game was so big because technically I feel like this game was a bit larger than the first one. Then also that you could rewind all previous things if you didn't figure out what I said, or you didn't like catch what I said and stuff like that. So they had a lot of cool stuff that I found were creative ways of like, okay, how are we going to make sure people understand when you're going to answer something, when a sentence is done, and all of
Yeah.
that.
Yes, the differentiating between what is a bit of dialogue you are reading or having read to you and what is you being read out a dialogue option for you to select from. Like, they clarified that distinction with audio cues in a really smart way, for example. And then, do you want to talk about the Omega Reach?
So the Omega Reach was that was a game again, sadly, that I had a bit bugs with, so I didn't get to be completely into it. But you are a conservatorist, is that what we call it?
Yeah,
Where
like an observatory.
where you have an observatory and you use your Omega hand to reach out through time and space to look at and like research galaxies, stars, moons, and so on and so on. And it was like a game where you use sound and synth and music to sort of figure out how like to research a galaxy to make it show you its information about it. And then you can found instrument and you can get when you got these instruments, you can sell them sort of like on a market. So you get a collection and then you can sell this on the market. And it was a really nice game. Sadly, it ended up for me with having the again a bug where I could just push a button and then it got automatically researched everything. So it went from starting where I actually had to do the little tricky things where you sort of have to take one of the joysticks or the mouse and then drag out or in to find like the spot where you will read something. But in the end, I could just push a button and everything got researched at once. So that is that. But again, a month. These developers does more than a lot of like AAA games does for like 5 years. So credits to
Yeah.
them.
What I'll say for this one is this is by a developer called Shift Backtick, who we've talked about some of their games before. They are the person behind, say, Periphery Synthetic, which was one of the games from the AA Showcase a couple of years ago. Their games that they submit to the Games for Blind Gamers Jam have typically been some of the higher rated games that they've had in the jam. They're also some of the more ambitious games submitted in terms of big high concept stuff that's being attempted in terms of navigation and mechanics. And I think it's very notable that the first two games we talked about are very much here is a story being told through audio, and here are the tools to hear where you are in 3D space as you interact with a narrative and walk around 3D space. They're both very similar in how you describe them, and they're very similar to things like The Veil from like 3 or 4 years ago that did quite well. In terms of like the one genre of audio game that tends to be made quite often, Shift Backtick, for any problems I have with their games, or any times where I don't always 100% gel with the gameplay systems, I can respect that they are very much trying to make things that are not in the mold of what other blind playable audio games are doing, and that are pushing genre boundaries to try and make things that other audio game developers aren't trying. And I think that they are an important bit of this space in terms of like trying to make artsy, genre interesting stuff work through just audio.
Yes, and I found it to be a fun game of I sadly didn't understand it completely, but the part I was in was like this is it's fun to see because it's creative and it seemed sort of when I played it to be like never ending kind of game. And you just the curiosity and it just continued and continued and it was one of those games that I hope when it if it's going to be worked on more, try it again when it is a bit more done
Yes. Right
so
now
that I
it is
don't
an
let these.
interesting concept that I hope gets fleshed out.
Perfectly said, perfectly said.
You tried one other game for the Game Jam, correct?
Yes, I played the fourth place, which it was a toasty. It was
Yes.
like a deck building game, so sort of almost as a card game, which was luck based. So you get a bread card, and then you get an ingredients card, and then you're going to build the most fun toast you can make. But you're not allowed to make sandwiches because sandwiches are illegal. So if you get a new bread card before, before you have like sent this out to the customer, your round is over. Because then you made a sandwich, and that is illegal. And I like the concept. Sadly, again, it was one of those who sadly didn't work properly for me. But it was nice. And also, what I've done for accessibility was that they had like a really sharp edge around where like you were on the screen, so it showed properly where you were. And it was also a game where you can just take your time. Take your time, take and sort out. It was easy to understand the iconographic.
Iconography.
There
Yeah, I
we go.
gotcha.
I gotcha. So it was easy to understand and all of that. And so if you like deck building games, this was one of those kinds of games, and it was nice. It was also really pretty made, and yeah, if it had worked properly, I think it would have been fun. But yeah, sadly, again, it was one of those that you get the bugs. Again, I know I say it, and I just really, really, really might want to make sure that that doesn't mean that you guys will get bugs if you try out the game, because I do recommend them. I do recommend trying them, especially if you're a developer, just to be a bit, not influenced, be a bit like, what do you call it?
Inspired, maybe.
Inspired, thank you, to actually try something new.
I think the thing that can be said for all of these that I've tried this year from the game jam is even when the execution might struggle a little bit, or it might be that the idea is a little more ambitious than they had time to execute on, they all demonstrate that more genres than you think can be made accessible in this way to sightless blind players, and that playing something like this might give you an idea of, ooh, even if I don't know that this execution is working, maybe that sparks an idea and makes you go, oh, maybe this system would work, or maybe this system would work. Maybe I try implementing something in my game. It gets the ideas flowing, and it might be the thing that gets your game a little closer to being playable by more people.
And also that you don't need to do things the way other had done it before you. Like, we can do games. Like, games is a quite a non-restrictive media, and sometimes it's just nice to have fun with that. So yeah.
There's no one answer to how to make a game playable for sightless blind players, and this jam is a great example of there are a bunch of different approaches that you could experiment with and see if you can find the one that's going to work for your game.
Absolutely.
Oh, can I tell you about a thing that's not from this game jam that I'm really excited to talk about?
Yeah, of course.
I got to start playing an early version of, do you remember? I think you made a TikTok about this a while back, a game called Find Your Words. I
Yes.
got an early copy of Find Your Words,
Yeah.
and I've been playing it, and that game is so wonderful. I love it so
Oh.
much. So we talked about this a little while ago when a trailer of it came out. This is a game that I believe is being released completely for free, and it'll be out by the time this podcast goes up. I think it's maybe the same day as this episode. It's going to be out for free. It's made by two dads who have children who are non-verbal in various ways, and it is about a little summer camp for children who communicate in different ways. You play a small non-verbal child who has gone off to this summer camp, and you're just making friends with a bunch of other children, while developing a. You have this like physical binder full of lots of like little pictures that you can use to assemble sentences. They're sorted into a couple of different tabs, so like one of them is people, one is places, one is things, one is like connective words, and they were all assembled with pictures. And you basically go around making friends with a bunch of children who communicate in different ways. For some of them, there's a child with a wheelchair that has a digital AAC device. There are some children that just take a little longer to put their sentence together, but do speak verbally. Some of the things I really like about this, they don't overwhelm you with giving you the whole vocabulary at once. You can find words either by interacting with people and learning words that way, or by finding them in the world where they're relevant. And you're never expected to make a sentence out of more than two images. And the game is very good at explaining, like, don't worry about grammar and syntax. It's like, if you want to know someone's name, who name and name who will get you the same response, the same result. They'll you put them on your board, you turn the board around, the person will get what you're asking. And
Oh, nice.
it does a lot of work to sort of reinforce, like, if you are not someone who uses an AAC or you don't know a lot of AAC users, getting into the frame of mind of how someone who has restrictive language use might communicate, and showing that that doesn't have to be a barrier to them communicating their intent. But also, it's really good about going, just because someone is using very simple sentences with a system like this, doesn't mean they won't understand more complex sentences. You don't have, generally speaking, characters in this simplifying their speech to you just because you're speaking to them using simple constructs. They still talk to you in perfectly reasonable full sentences. And it's just a very sweet game about normalizing and explaining to people who don't have a frame of reference for it what AAC communication might look like. And
Yeah.
it's just so sweet and wholesome. I love it. It's so lovely.
I love that you're saying the fact that like how like where you put the words in a sentence doesn't really matter. As somebody who has dyslexia, and like I will never understand how it can be frustrating to use a device like that because people like determine you to talk at a pace they demand or stuff like that. But I can almost every single week somebody corrects my language, even though what I'm saying is understandable. And I even for that find it really, really, really annoying. Like I get like incredibly annoyed, but I'm not allowed, quote unquote, to show it because like they are always just trying to help. And I can
Oh, sorry,
absolutely like love the fact that they are showcasing these, that like as long as you make yourself understood and you're not saying anything wrong or offensive and stuff, do we actually have to correct people? Which is also again back to why I loved learning Chinese, because in Chinese is often the easiest way to get to the what you're trying in context to say is what is accepted. So if you say something that is meant to be understood for the receiving person, it's just like, oh, yeah, no, that's correct. Where you put the verb and the substance and the noun in a sentence, don't care, as long as it makes sense.
I hope you don't mind me talking about this. When I subtitle Control Alt Access, I don't change the order of your words at all, or there are times where you'll say a sentence where it's like, I could rewrite that in a way that in English grammar would probably make more sense or be more traditionally read. I don't do that because the way that you say things is entirely understandable, and anyone who gets funny about that, that's their problem, because you might occasionally put a word not where a native English speaker or the first language English speaker might put that word. It doesn't make your sentence any less understandable.
And that's the thing, like, because like I make all my content in a secondary language, which my brain doesn't even think in. So I need to live translate everything I say. And then, of course, things will be different because I speak a whole different language. And also, but also in Norwegian, people correct me on things. And it's just like, do you actually have to correct me here? Do we actually have to do this? Because as long as, again, as long as you don't As long as you make sense, because sometimes
Fair enough.
we say things that doesn't make sense.
Huh.
Or
And
you
those
did.
times I'll let you know, but
Yes. Or as long as
yeah.
you like said something wrong, like of course people, or say something that is bad, because like sometimes you just like, oh, is this actually not something we should say in this language?
But yeah,
Okay.
I'm a big believer if what you're saying gets understood by the listener, then you've said it fine.
Yes. The sort of like snobbery, especially around our generation, because we were the generation who, at least here in Norway, or at least where I was online in the early times of online, like being something they called a grammar Nazi was like something people enjoyed. Literally, whatever you said, people would correct you. So to the degree that I never talked English online for like the first 5 years I did anything online because I was so afraid of being corrected by these people that all they did was to correct your speech, what you've written, and everything else. So I am glad, like, and I am a grown woman, 33-year-old, sitting here having a crime against people doing this to me. And then we have a game that now can teach kids that people communicate in different ways, and that is okay. And I absolutely love that.
Last thing I'll say on that game, and it's something you mentioned very, very quickly in passing that I want to highlight, which is none of the characters in this game rush the main character to communicate. They will be as patient as needed while you find the words that you need to get that sentence out. I really like that. But don't go into this expecting a game that's going to be particularly complicated or challenging, for most of the kind of people watching this, but it is a really lovely experience that is just a wholesome friendship and community builder with a focus on AAC communication and non-verbal forms of communication, and I think it's a really lovely experience.
Absolutely.
There is a paid version of it, an optional supporter edition, which is $4.99 and includes the soundtrack and a digital booklet of printable activities, such as a bird watching log journal and things. But the game itself will be free and is out. I've double checked the day it'll be out the day before this goes live. So I'm glad I've had a chance to play it in advance. It's so lovely.
I'm glad. I'm really, really glad.
What about you? Have you played anything you particularly want to talk about today?
You know what? I've played one thing that I want to talk about, which is Ghost of Jotun. I finally played it.
Ooh, yeah.
Absolutely love it. Absolutely love
It's
it.
so good.
It is so good. The only thing is that I got like I got a bit like shocked when I started playing it because it is so good. Like Laura, put up all the accessibility in this game on the screen right now. I'll send you the clip I have
Oh,
because
I've
like
got clips, don't worry.
yes, there is so many. But what I really have to just like hammer through because yes, all the love to this game. I'm having so much fun with it. I will continue playing it. It was like it's now my new like I am chilling in the evening kind of game. Absolutely love it. But this game does that cardinal sin that we need to stop doing, and that is not giving us access to settings before you start the game. And like, I love that the fact that it gives you the access to some settings before you start the game, and it has subtitles, but they are so tiny when you start the game, and they do not have any backdrop when you start the game, a background. And I am just like, my vision is just like minus 1.75 or something. It's not even bad, but when I'm sitting in the sofa I cannot read it. I don't know, this is
I don't know if the biggest problem I had with that game has been fixed at all since I played it. The biggest issue I had was with contrast. A lot of times in menus, text would be sort of grey on a grey background in a way that wasn't very easy to read. But also when you were on the map, the little map cursor would be really hard to see against the background of the map. So often I was sort of fumbling around to point at things on the map. Those were problems I had at launch. I don't know if they persist as issues, but
I can remember that the text being quite small, but I do remember, But yeah, it is a gray on gray text, but I think it is a bit darker than just
Okay.
gray now. Might be. I'm not going to say
Yeah.
too surely. I am also wondering, have you played this game with like an access controller?
A little bit, but not much.
Because I was wondering, because this game is a lot of one of the things they try to use is that they use the PlayStation controller a lot, so you
Yeah.
have to like stroke the like the little pad in the middle of the
Yeah.
PlayStation controller, like
So,
different ways, and you have to like
yeah.
when you drawing like the calligraphy, you have to do it
Yeah.
on the thing.
So,
How do they do it when you have the access controller connected?
I was playing ahead of the game's release. I had an early review copy, and at that time, there was no alternative. You had to have a DualSense, and you had to touch the touchpad to do those sections. You don't have to. The bit where you're doing calligraphy, for example, you don't actually have to mimic the shapes they're doing. You can just sort of scribble your finger and it does get through. But you couldn't do those with just an access controller. There was an update post-release, I believe, that I think allowed you to opt out of doing that with the touchpad. I don't remember whether it was you could skip it or whether you could do it with a different input. I would have to double check. I believe you no longer need the touchpad as a mandatory input to get through those sections.
That is good though. I do like that. I think it is because that was the one thing I was a bit like, this is hard for some people. Also, the fact that but that you could skip though, but like when you were trying to get up a fire, when you had the pause in the game, like when you had a camp, you had to like lift the controller up and down and up and down. And a lot of people play with the controller just laying on the surface in front of them, not actually holding it, so that would also be a bit tricky. But in all, I absolutely loved it. It is possibility to pause the game whenever. I love the fact that I can hear it in Japanese, so I'm playing it in Japanese with English subtitles, and it is just lovely a game, and it is such a I cannot get over the fact that it just lets you do whatever you want. In the form of like, I love doing side quests, but the more side quests I do, the more information about the main quest I'm getting. And I can decide where I want to go and what I want to do. And also the fact with the wind that is just guiding you slowly, no matter if you have activated the wind to show you where the next quest is, it just subtly shows,
Yeah.
sways you towards everything. It is just lovely. And I think these small things are just a show that you can have a beautiful game and you can have a game and the vision you want to have it and still have accessibility. Because that is something I hear so many times that people believe that accessibility means that I have to stop doing my vision. And it's just like, no, absolutely not. You can have the accessibility that undermines, or not undermines, but
It doesn't
make
undermine.
your yeah doesn't undermine, there we go, doesn't undermine, it makes your vision stronger, it makes your
Yeah.
vision more accessible for everyone,
Yeah.
and I absolutely really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to continue playing it.
Oh, I'm so glad you're having a good time with it.
Yes.
I have played some other things this week, but I might leave them for this week. I think the ones I've talked about for now will do for this show. Do we want to talk about a couple of little bits of news and then wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. I do have a new caption that is out, which is called Caption Rush, which is live captioning for Discord voice chat while gaming. This person actually also sent me a like on my web page, like they sent me a message on my web page, and I didn't hear anything from them after I sent them a message. And I was a bit like, oh no, I hope that they know that I was interested in their product. I just am always really, 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 really scared of downloading anything online.
I getcha.
Yes. But now I saw that Can I Play That have written about it as well, which makes me it easier for me to trust that I can download it. And it is the developer of Caption Rush has made a live captioning app for Discord voice chat, which is nice.
There's some things to be aware of it. It allows for being used with a couple of different text-to-speech softwares, some of which will provide better more accurate results, but are paid. So you have there is a subscription option on this to get the access to the sort of best quality text-to-speech. I've yet to have a chance to play around with it. Despite being pitched as being a Discord-specific option, it does seem to have the ability to work with any audio source. You might be able to find uses for it outside of voice chat, like if you are watching a video on somewhere that isn't YouTube that doesn't have subtitles, for example. This can be used to give you live captioning for those, which is worth knowing. Great that we're getting support for this kind of stuff being worked on. That's really cool. The other one we have is Logitech has shared 3D files for some adaptive add-ons for the Pebble Mouse. So the Pebble Mouse is a Logitech mouse that the Pebble Mouse 2 M350 is a light and small mouse that is easier for people that have like smaller hands or who have less reach in their hands to be able to use. It has a magnetic bit on the top of it, which means that you can magnetically take the top of it off and put new parts on, which is what Logitech has released these 3D print parts for, is hey, these will just clip on the top of your mouse. If you want, you can glue magnets here and it'll like stay in place. To be able to do things like, do you need little edges up the side of your hands so that like your hand nestles inside the mouse, for example? Do you need it to be a bit wider for your hand to be able to comfortably use it? Do you need it to be taller in the middle to be comfortable for you? And I just really like that this mouse is designed to have bits swapped out of it from the start, and that the company is making free 3D printing files available to replace the top and have different adaptable versions of it.
I also like that when they give out the files, that also gives it easier for people who want to make their own adaption can easily just start from this and continue making their new things that they need, which I like.
They've also set up a community sharing forum for other people's adapted toppers for this mouse. So there's one easy place to find what other people have been working on in that space. So that's really nice. There we go, two
And you
bits
can
of
get
just
it in
nice,
pink.
and you can get it in pink. Two just nice bits of news this week. Yay.
Yay.
So it's a little short this week, but I think we're gonna wrap up here because we both got stuff going on. We're recording this on a bank holiday still, so on a bank holiday weekend. So Arevio, where can people find you on the internet if they want more of the stuff you're doing?
They can find me everywhere under the name Arevia. I was recently in Can I Play That? A community like highlight. So if anybody wants to go read that, feel free to do so. At the moment, still doing my short form content. That is what my energy is there for. And I'm doing a lot of fun things recently. So please come and check me out with TikTok or Instagram. Actually, also I saw that they got automatically opposed to Facebook. So hey, if anybody is still on Facebook, I am under there, Arevia Gaming. Laura, where can people find you?
People can find me at Laura K Buzz. That's where I'm at, wherever you find people. Patreon, that's the one that pays the bills and lets me keep doing all this stuff. Thank you very much, everyone, for watching. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another of these. Bye.
Bye.